Hello and welcome to The Tips, a betting preview podcast from the DP World Tour. I'm your host, Ollie Silverton, and as usual, I'm joined by some expert guests as we look ahead to the first of the PGA Tour playoffs, the FedEx St. Jude Championship from TPC Southwind. Before we start, it is important to note that this podcast is aimed at listeners aged 18 and over. All odds were accurate at the time of recording, and the betting information is aimed at a UK audience only. Please remember to gamble responsibly, and for more information, visit begambleaware.org. Yes, it's a very special week and we have some expert guests from all over the world, which is very exciting. So let's get straight into them. We've got Ben Coley, bit of a regular here. He's the deputy head of content at Sporting Life, and Will Gray, the editorial lead of Betting and Fantasy at the PGA Tour. Gents, great to have you on. Ben, I'm going to come to you first quickly, just for a quick, you know, recap of any luck last week at all in the events.
I hit my son for 30 runs in one over on the beach on our little holiday, if that counts. He'll recover from that. Adam Svensson in a big share of seventh was the closest I came. Obviously, you know, he hit the front in round two. He was cruising along. He was in the middle of the fairway at the par five, and he took six. And from there, it was a case of treading water, and I was happy enough in the end that he got where he did. I think whenever you've got a player that hits the front and looks so good, and I think he briefly traded as favourite, you know, it's disappointing when they're not even in the conversation come Sunday afternoon. Obviously turned into a bit of a head-to-head, but in the end, got out alive, and we'll try again this week.
Perfect. And speaking of getting out alive, we've got Will Gray, who I think you were very wise and you just saved it for this week. You knew you were coming on, so you had nothing last week, but talk us through that final stretch with Lucas Glover, the rain delay, Russell Henley. How much did you enjoy watching that?
Yeah, first of all, I was told there will be no cricket talk on this podcast, so I'm already questioning my appearance here. I know we've got the global audience, but yeah, listen, I love the Wyndham. I've covered that event a couple times. I think it's a great track and a really fun event. I really felt like Sunday was shaping up for Russell Henley. I thought that he was exactly where he needed to be. I didn't have a ton of faith in Glover and Horschel in the lead groups, but Glover proved me wrong. I think that the rain delay came at the right time. Certainly, Russell Henley finding every divot at Sedgefield Country Club coming home didn't help, but kudos to Glover for figuring it out on the greens, because that's always been his weak spot, and now he's back in the winner's circle.
Yeah, it really was a very exciting end, and just bizarre things happening, from his ball hitting buggies to Justin Thomas with the biggest draw nearly holing out to make the playoffs. It was all going down. One person who was less excited about the finish is, of course, Dave Tindall, who tipped up Russell Henley at 22-1 on the podcast. We do get each way returns there, but it could have been so much more. Now it's time to look ahead to the event this week, which is the FedEx St. Jude Championship. Yes, that's right. The FedEx St. Jude Championship is hosted at TPC Southwind, and it has been since 1989. Last year, it was Will Zalatoris who beat Ryder Cup hopeful Sepp Straka in a playoff. Will isn't in the field as he's still recovering from back surgery back in April, and he's a name we've really missed this year and won't be in Ryder Cup sort of conversations because of it. But Will, as our man in America, what can you tell us about this course particularly?
This is an interesting tournament, an interesting course, because the event itself has kind of gone under a couple different facelifts over the last 4 or 5 years. It used to be a full field event, then it was WGC, now it's a playoff event. So there's not a lot of consistent course history, because the guys were playing it at different times of the year. So it's interesting, you've got 70 guys in the field this week. Only one of them has ever won at TPC Southwind, and that was Harris English 10 years ago. So there's not a real recent winner of the top, I think, 12 or 13 guys. On the top of the betting board, only John Rahm has multiple top tens. So also not a ton of course form or course history to look at. TPC Southwind, a ton of water balls. When it was a full field event on the PGA Tour, it was among the leaders year in and year out in terms of balls in the water on average. So you're going to have, I think, 11 holes where water comes into play, a lot of dog legs, especially on the par fours. So I don't know about Ben, but I'm leaning on my ball strikers. Usually if you're good tee to green, you can play most places, but especially TPC Southwind, and certainly getting it off the tee, that's going to be really pivotal this week.
Okay, brilliant. Ben, we'll come to you with that then and your knowledge of this course. The last few weeks, you have, 2 weeks ago, the 3M, you said there are correlations with the Honda. That put Lee Hodges in. Lee Hodges wins. Last week, we have Sawgrass as the link. Lucas Glover, great form there. Lucas Glover wins. So the courses to look at and similar courses have been very profitable for some, and potentially not you, but we'll let that go. So what is it this week? Which courses should we be looking at that and we can really relate to?
Sure. Well, I mean, the obvious one would probably be PGA National, which is home of the Honda Classic. You'd have to say that there are obvious similarities there with the nature of the closing stretch and the water that's in play and the need to make sure you avoid those ruinous numbers. Unfortunately, the Honda has obviously not been the strongest event in recent years. So a lot of guys here who haven't played it, a lot of the best players in the world who generally don't go there. But that'd be one. I don't think Sawgrass is a bad place to go looking for clues either. Obviously, Daniel Berger knows that course very well and has played well there. He's a two-time champion here. And I would say that the fundamental test is similar. And if there's a key stat this week, it is that 9 of the last 12 winners at this golf course led the field in strokes gained tee to green. Now, obviously, most weeks, the leader in strokes gained tee to green is right up there and very much in the mix. But 9 out of 12 is a heck of a return for the field leader. That's of the 70 players this week. Whoever does lead the field in strokes gained tee to green will have an excellent chance. And it would be 10 of 12. It had Hideki Matsuyama won the playoff, which went instead to Abraham Ancer a couple of years ago. So exactly what Will said, you got to strike your ball, simple as that. You got to stay out of water. And we saw, I mean, ultimately the tournament last year was defined or decided by the fact that Will Zalatoris' ball didn't quite go in the water. And shockingly, and to my delight, we have to hold on to these memories when things aren't going so well. Will Zalatoris' ball didn't quite go in the water, and Sepp Straka did go in the water. And that's probably the final thing to say about Southwind. Whatever you think about it as a golf course, it is built for this kind of event, for this kind of magnitude, the money and the points that are on offer, the Ryder Cup places that are potentially on offer as well. You know, you've got to stand up and hit shots over those final 10, 12 holes. And I'm sure on Sunday it will deliver. We've not had that many thrilling finishes lately. I think we'll probably get one here.
Brilliant, yeah. And those stats, interesting, you picked up on that. Yeah, the strokes gained tee to green, basically always first. Scrambling and strokes gained off the tee were really high up ranking as well. But one thing that also came through, Will, and interested to get your thoughts on this, is does this event particularly lend its name to a big name winner? Because out of the last 7 events, everyone has been 45 to 1 and under, I think it came in as, plus 4,500 in your terminology. So is that something you'll be looking towards in your selections and something that definitely plays on your mind in your research?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the field composition really plays a role here. Even last year when it was a playoff event, it had 125 guys. Now you have 70. It's a no-cut field. So everyone's playing 4 rounds. I think inevitably in that situation, the cream rises to the top. So I'm certainly going to look to the top of the board. Maybe you can have a long shot that can come through. Sepp Straka was certainly not on the short list for me last year, and he nearly pulled it off. But I do think that, you know, you have it set up not only for the FedEx Cup, but for this week. You've got the big three, and you have everyone else. You've got Rahm, Scheffler, and McIlroy that have really distanced themselves on the PGA Tour this year. They're up in kind of this upper tier on the odds board as a result. And then there's a big drop off to guys like Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele. I do think that if you have a 70-man field, it would surprise me if you go beyond maybe the top 20 in the odds board to see anyone in the bottom 50 of this field come through to win. Not to say that they can't. We're going to have a shocker. Andrew Putnam is someone that has had a lot of success at TPC Southwind, and it's definitely in triple-digit zone for prices on the outright market. But I do think that the way that this field is composed and the structure of this tournament, with it being a no-cut event, the best in the world are going to have 4 cracks at Southwind, and eventually that's going to be good for them.
Yeah, brilliant. Absolutely right. The field is stacked, and one of the names in there is Rory McIlroy, who missed the cut last year, but then went on to the eventual champion. How important for you, Ben, is it that you get off to a very good start? Do you think it massively helps, especially obviously if you're around the bubble, it will, but the guys nearer the top, do you think it will play on their mind at all?
I don't think it would bother them too much. These guys are very good at understanding the long game. But in terms of the FedEx Cup, obviously we only have 3 tournaments now. So by way of an example, if someone who will come to Sam Burns were to win this event, he's still not quite at the top of the FedEx Cup standings. And he'd only have then the BMW Championship. And we go into Eastlake where everything's reset and we have the staggered start. So you've got 2 standard events left, 2 opportunities to win the 3,000 points that you get for Is it 2,000 or 3,000 that you get for winning one of these titles? So it is 2,000. Thanks, Will. I think the top guys, they won't worry about it. I mean, what worries have John Rahm, Scottie Scheffler, and Rory McIlroy really got here? But the guys like Sam Burns, one example, maybe even someone like Colin Morikawa, a Cam Young, a Tony Finau in particular, they'll be thinking they need to do something not over the next 3 weeks, but actually over the next two, because that's when Ryder Cup qualification ends. But it's also the last chance you've got to take part in what we'd call a normal tournament, right? I don't think if you start the Tour Championship in 30th and you play the best golf that week and finish 15th, that will catch the eye in the way that it would if you started the week in first, played the 10th best golf, but still won the FedEx Cup.
Yeah, I think of this sometimes in terms of poker terminology with a tournament, where if you're right at the cash bubble and some of these guys that are in that top 50 or even top 30 zone might get a little precarious, they can feel the nerves. Whereas if you're a more experienced player, you've got a ton of chips, you're just trying to keep the foot on the gas. And I think that's what we're going to have, especially with the guys at the top this week. And I really think that the dynamic is going to change next week with the BMW. That's when even the top guys are going to have that starting strokes format in the back of their mind. They're going to know that, you know, if I finish third, fourth, fifth, that's going to have a material difference on where I start at East Lake. This week in Memphis, it's just rack up as many points as I can, play as well as I can, look at the scoreboard on Sunday. Whereas next week, I think you're going to have more of those permutations in play.
Okay, brilliant. Let's have a look at some of the prices of those big names at the top of the market. So we've got Scottie Scheffler leading the way at 7-1. His copy and paste price, Rory McIlroy 8-1, John Rahm 9-1, Patrick Cantlay and Victor Hovland at 16s. Then we get into Schauffele at 18s. And then the 20s is Spieth and Hatton at 22s. Fitzpatrick, Fowler and Colin Morikawa at 25. So all seems fair. And a long way from, I think it was Fabian Gomez I saw in 2015 at 400-1. So a bit of a jump there in Ben Gray in the year 450s. So that is the price at the top of the market. But I think it's now time to find out who you guys are going to open up with as your couple of outright picks. So I'll come to you first, Will. Who are you going to throw at us to keep an eye on this week?
All right, let's get this started pretty well. I'll give you two winners, even though only one of them could win. Anytime that we get these limited field events, no-cut events, I look at Xander Schauffele and I look for a reason not to pick him. And I can't find one this week because he is a little bit underrated, I think just because he hasn't won yet this year on the PGA Tour, but he's right where he needs to be, top 15 on the PGA Tour in approach, a really strong putter, among the most well-rounded players in this field, had a top 10 at this event back in 2020. But if you look at the tournaments that he's won, including the Olympics, Century, East Lake, WGCs, these limited field events, even when he's going against the best in the world, when he has four rounds to play, eventually he puts himself in the mix. I think we're going to see that again from Xander Schauffele in that 1800 range, 18-1. And another one that Ben actually mentioned a couple minutes ago, I'm very bullish on Sam Burns this week. I think if you look at this course and the skill set that he provides, it's a really good fit. He was a runner-up here in his debut 2 years ago, top 20 last year. He's someone that, especially when I look at the outright market, he has high win equity in my mind. He wins more than maybe you think he should. He does a good job of converting those chances into trophies, has been a little quiet since winning the match play back in March, but did find a pair of top 20s in his last two starts at Wyndham and the Scottish Open. That's just enough form to really kind of catch my eye in that 35-1 range. So he's making the card this week.
Yeah, I like Burns a lot. I think you look at where he's won as well. A couple of wins in Texas. I think he won in Alabama on the Corn Ferry Tour.
Mississippi.
Jackson, Mississippi for the Sanderson Farms. Yeah. He's won on the Corn Ferry Tour in the Deep South as well. And obviously the Valspar in Florida, which he won back to back. So this is his area, isn't it? And after the Wyndham, I thought there was enough encouragement there. And interesting as well to see whether any of the top players are caught cold by the fact they've not played since the Open. If you go back to last year, one thing that Zalatoris and Straka had in common was that they had both played. I think Zalatoris had played twice between the Open and the playoffs, keen to avoid what had happened the year before when I think he wasn't allowed in the playoffs, was he? And Straka as well had played well at the Wyndham. So yeah, I'm very pro Burns as well. But I can't get away from Scheffler. Interesting you say there, Ollie, his sort of copy and paste price. And you're right, it's not varied a lot over the last 6 months because the standard of his play hasn't varied a lot either. Obviously, it's all about the putter. I mean, he's first in strokes gained tee to green on the PGA Tour. He's a long way clear of Rory McIlroy in second. I think the gap between those two is about 7/10 of a shot. That's the same gap as the guys in like 30th to 40th and the guys in 100th. So there's a huge gap between the best two players on the tour in strokes gained tee to green. The reason he's not wanting Sawgrass is the putter. But I do think as well, I mean, there have been a couple of really bad weeks with the putter. There have been a few okay ones. He could have won the PGA Championship. He putted okay. He could have won the Byron Nelson where he putted okay. I would take an okay putting week. If he can rank 30th in putting and continue the way he's hitting the ball, that could be enough. I mean, Justin Thomas won this losing strokes with the putter. Hideki Matsuyama could have done the same. And it is one of those tournaments where you can get away with just being okay on the greens. Obviously, Zalatoris was better than his usual, but not spectacular in any means. In terms of why we might hope for that to happen, there are really two reasons. One, Bermuda grass. Now, most of his wins, I think 5 of his last 6 wins have come on Bermuda. Statistically, there doesn't seem to be a big difference in how he putts across surfaces, but I do think there's probably a comfort level somewhere within for a guy who's obviously been brought up in Texas on this sort of grass. And the second reason is the final round of the Open. And this is probably a little bit more hopeful on my part, but he ranked 16th in putting that day. Made a big move from the cut line into the top 30. And if something is clicked, then he'll be a threat to everybody these next 3 weeks. Obviously, in fact, he'll be the man they've all got to beat. The final thing I'd say, there's a lot of talk about why hasn't he changed something? Why hasn't he gone left hand over right? Why hasn't he tried the long putter that Lucas Glover put to such good effect last week? Maybe in time that will be necessary. But I think there's something to be said or some encouragement to be drawn from the fact that he's really not changed a lot. Because that to me suggests that in his mind, he's not far off solving this problem. And I think it shows a degree of faith in his own ability to do that. And I'm sure he will. So if he does it this week, then watch him go. I think he's the man they've got to be.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I was watching that with Ben Ann as well. I think the long one thinking, Scheffler's not changing, but you're right, sticking with it. We've seen how many times Sergio's changed from different things and Thomas Bjorn with one armed and resting everywhere that he obviously backs himself, which is nice to see. So with those so far, we've got Schauffele is around 18-1, 7 places, and that was 2 points each way from Will, and Sam Burns 40-1 and 7 places as well for that and another 2 points each way. And Scheffler, just a 5-point win from Ben. He's feeling very bullish on Scotty. And I'm going to stick with you, Ben. You've got a second name I can see here who you're liking to join.
Yeah, it's Colin Morikawa. I think, you go to the strokes gained approach stats for the year. Scheffler leads them. You won't be surprised. He also leads the off the tee stats. But Morikawa is the only other player gaining more than a stroke per round. And it's kind of what we'd expect from him. Iron play, obviously, having been the thing that sets him apart since he arrived in 2019. The main thing with him, though, I mean, two. One, the course. I think Southwind's a really good fit. He's played well all 3 visits, top 30 all 3, and fifth last year. Fifth last year came off the back of 2 missed cuts in the Scottish Open and then the Open. He missed the cut in the Open by a single shot. But he also missed the cut by a single shot in the Travelers a few weeks before that and then came out and had a putt to win the Rocket Mortgage Classic in Detroit. If you look at his putting stats, they're kind of better lately as well. For the most part, they're probably not as volatile as they have been in the past. And there are 2 sides to that because actually, in some ways, his putting volatility is what's made him a major champion, right? He's had 2 amazing weeks with the putter and won 2 majors. But he is capable of that sort of performance. Bermuda would be a bit of a negative, unlike a Burns, say, where we could say without doubt it's a positive that he's putting on these greens. With Morikawa, it's probably not a positive, but I don't think there's enough evidence to suggest it has to be a big problem. He's putted well in a couple of events in Florida. He won the WGC Workday in Florida. The WGC, it was the Workday, wasn't it? The one-off event they played there at the concession. So, everything really I like about him for this golf course. And the main message, as I say, don't be put off by a missed cut. He, among the world's best players, there's probably no one more likely to go from a missed cut to contending than Colin Morikawa. He's done it this summer, and I think he'll do it again.
Yeah, with that, what is he? He's the DP World Tour's Guido Miglozzi or Adrianos, just full blown one way to the other, and you want to be on the right side of them. He rounds off the main selections there, then at 25-1 and 2 points each way from Ben. And now, Will, we like you. You're big in the betting and fantasy world. We like building out this card, and you threw out a few more names, not just outright, but some other special markets you've looked at as well.
Yeah, for sure. I think, again, as you look at this field, I do expect the top tier winner, all the four names that, that Ben and I have thrown out. I don't think any of them would really surprise you to be holding the trophy on Sunday. And so maybe I look to a top 10 or a top 20 or even someone to back in a head-to-head matchup as things get going on Thursday. One guy that's definitely on my list and on my card in a similar price range, maybe a little bit higher than Sam Burns, is Matt Fitzpatrick. And he's one of the few guys in that top tier that has some course form history at Southwind. Three of the last 4 years has been sixth or better, and in a course that sometimes has produced a single-digit score under par as a winner. I don't mind backing a U.S. Open champion, even though he's been a little bit spotty over these last few weeks in the summer. But I think that if you can get him, I've seen him at 3-1 or plus 300 for a top 10 finish. I think that that's a really promising number for a course where there's going to be penalties for if you stray off the tee, especially. So I like having Matt Fitzpatrick involved. And then I will say, you know, the guy that's leading the PGA Tour this season in total driving, it's not Rory, it's not John Rahm, it is Keith Mitchell. He might be the best dressed guy on the PGA Tour. I'm not picking him for that reason, although I do love the visor flow. But again, this is a course where it's going to be imperative to keep it in play off the tee. And I think that if you look at the guys that are near the top 50 bubble, especially Mitchell is 58, there's not a lot of names in that 48 to 56 range that really instill a lot of confidence. There's guys that if they get into the BMW, they're really leveling up. And so I think that this is a chance for someone like Mitchell, who's more of a veteran presence, to just go out and play and put up a number, potentially get into like a top 20 market at plus 240 or plus 250, top 40 in all three starts at TPC Southwind back when it was a full field event. So he's going to be all gas, no brakes, trying to get into that top 50. And I think it could play to his benefit. And the last one that I'll throw at you is definitely more of a long shot in terms of the outright market, but maybe to get him in a top 30 at plus money, just to beat about half the field, is Eric Cole. He's maybe the player that's playing the best on the PGA Tour this season that your buddies don't know about. Has really, if you go back to Ben's point about the Honda Classic, which I agree with, when we look at what Sepp Straka did here last year, Eric Cole lost in a playoff to Chris Kirk this year. So there's some good comps there. He's a Florida guy, plays a lot of Bermuda, and has been really solid in following up that near miss. And it's a little bit of a surprise to see his name in this upper echelon field. He's definitely punching above his weight, but I think that when you look at some of those derivative markets, maybe a head-to-head matchup, Eric Cole is someone that I'm going to look to get on the right side of, because I do think that even if he's out of the mix, he's sitting at 40th in points right now. So if he's out of the mix, I still think he's going to keep his foot on the gas over the weekend. Some of these guys, if they're starting the week in 60th or 62nd, if it doesn't go well the first 2 days, they might clock out and know that their season is over. Eric Cole, you're going to get four good rounds out of him, bell to bell. So I think that he is someone that is of interest to me, let's say.
It'd be interesting to see, won't it, as well, whether Matt Fitzpatrick takes any inspiration from his brother winning on Sunday. They're a very, very close family. And that was great to see Alex, obviously, on a path to the DP World Tour. And it was similar reasons, really. I looked at Harris English. I thought he was a name to consider. Will mentioned him earlier, the only course winner in the field 10 years ago in June that year when he won here. And obviously another from the South who will putt well on these greens. He actually had a bad short game week at the Wyndham Championship last week, which is really rare for Harris English. And it kind of caught the eye. And he's got all kinds of good vibes. He's a new dad. He's good friends with Brian Harman. He's one of those names that's kind of slipped off the radar a bit, but he's popped up on some big leaderboards this year. But in the end, I went higher up the odds for the last one I'll give you, or lower down the odds, whichever way you want to put it, to Cam Young. So in terms of the comparisons with Will Zalatoris, obviously both out of Wake Forest, both good friends. Both arrived here looking for their first win and in really good form. Two top tens his last three starts for Cam Young. He hit the ball absurdly well in the Open Championship, one of the best ball striking displays you're ever likely to see. Obviously putted poorly and finished eighth. But he's putted well on his last two starts in the States. That includes when he missed the cut in the 3M Open, which I'm not really worried about, because he flew in from being in the mix all week in Hoylake, difficult weather, just a draining experience, and then he missed the cut in the 3M Open. It just doesn't bother me in the slightest. He was second in strokes gained tee to green on his Southwind debut last year. Zalatoris was first, but Young putted abysmally. And that's kind of the theme, I guess, with a few of my selections this week. We're going to have to land on a good putting week for one of them if we're going to win. But Cam Young has been putting a bit better lately, and he's got all the motivation in the world, given that he's yet to win. And given that, really, although Fred Couples seemed to suggest that is going to be selected anyway. I still think he's probably feeling like he's got a bit to do to prove that he's worth a place in the Ryder Cup side. So yeah, Cam Young's around the 33 to 40 to one mark. And as Will's alluded to a couple of times, I think we're looking at an elite winner here. So I was happy to stack all my selections from the top sort of 20 names in the market.
Yeah, great. You're right. Cam Young is around that 40 mark, as is Fitzpatrick, mentioned by Will. So we're chucking a point each way there. Keith Mitchell, the wide brim visor look, just a hell of a look from the lad. That is 90 to 1, seven places. And Eric Cole, as big as 125 to 1, seven places. And then also the all the other markets, top 10, Fitzy is 3 to 1, Mitchell 11 to 4, and Eric Cole 21 to 20. But he might take have a little look at our first ever head-to-head, which I like bringing that flavour, Will, and talk about good vibes with Harris English. I think I'm right in saying is a big part of Sea Island, plays a lot out of there, which is also where Lucas Glover spends a lot of time. So there's another correlation. Everyone around him winning hopefully brings in a bit of that good juju for him. Ben, I'm not going to let you get away with this because there's one other name and we love massive odds, and you've a couple of times you've mentioned someone and it hasn't made it to air and it's won or been cut before. Come on, tell us about Davis Riley. Just a little nugget about him.
Yeah, sorry. I am willing to throw a bit of loose change at Davis Riley this week. It's kind of a similar case to that which I've made for, say, Sam Burns, who obviously got the better of him in the Valspar last spring. If you go back to the start of this year, I think I look at the very simple form book of Davis Riley tells you everything about the player for now. And obviously players evolve, they learn, they get better, some get worse. But, you know, their characteristics can change. But for now, he's just clearly at his most comfortable where he grew up playing golf, right? Which is in the southeast on Bermuda greens in hot conditions. He played in California at the start of the year. He did basically nothing. He comes over, he plays the Honda Classic as his first start. Back on the East Coast, he finishes 29th. I think he was fourth in strokes gained tee to green. And then 1 week later, he's in the top 10 at Bay Hill, where most of the big names in golf were involved in the finish. That tells you a lot about him. Now, the problem is that he's not really kicked on from this. And he certainly, since winning the Zurich Classic with Nick Hardy, he's yet to post a solo top 30 finish anywhere. And that's a bit of a worry. But if you look at how he's driving the ball, he's improved massively on what he was doing in the spring. His approach play is hit and miss. It really is. And if you go back to this tournament last year, one of the best drivers, one of the worst iron players. That's kind of the Davis Riley experience as we've come to know it over the last 18 months or so. But he's definitely got all the talent to contend in an event like this. And as I said, he was mid-pack on his debut last year. And the thing, he's out, he was 250 to one, right? In a field of 70, they were basically saying there's no less likely winner of this tournament than him. A couple of others are a similar price. And I'm not sure I agree. And the reason really is that he missed the cut in the Wyndham. And if you look at how he hit the ball, nothing wrong with it at all. He just had a shocking week around the greens. And again, I come back to what I said. That's Davis Riley. It's highly likely he does one thing terribly. But if he can avoid that, then I think there's a good chance he can be one of the surprise names in the mix and hopefully keep his ball out of the water for 72 holes.
There's a lot of this field when you get down to the top 70 where you might scroll down. And you're like, how exactly did he get here? And what's he doing, given that we haven't heard from him in these last few weeks? You know, like you said, Davis Riley is getting a lot of leverage off of that team win at the Zurich. But now it's a chip and a chair situation, right? This is a tournament where all these guys know that they're going to have four rounds at Southwind. And as you said, if things align, even for two or three rounds for someone like Davis Riley, all of a sudden you're in the mix, you're in the top 10 going into the final round. Stranger things have happened. I'm all about loose change plays around this tournament.
Beautiful. We like loose change. Exactly right. We'll recap all of those picks a bit later. But before then, it's time for everyone's favourite. It's a game of Who Am I? Will, first time, welcome. Long time listener, obviously, first time player. What happens here is I give a player who I think is going to go well and give some obscure facts and stats about them. And you guys, after each one, can guess. If you haven't got a clue, we move on to the next one. They start pretty rogue because you guys are basically geniuses and get a bit less nuance. Everyone I back basically has missed the cut till last week when I went with Billy Horschel. The guys didn't get him till clue five when I said he's a West Ham fan. But he was leading after 54 holes and bottled it. So I'm sorry for putting the curse on Billy. And we're going to try it this week. So the first thing about me is, if I wasn't a golfer, I would be a professional chef. Do you have any ideas? Imagine a debut, Will. You just bang like that.
Oh yeah, that's it'll be good walk off. But no, I'm not going to name that tune in one note.
Okay, Ben, you can chuck a name or just move to clue two.
No name from me this time. No, I'm saving it.
Okay, I have cousins who have played in the NBA and NFL. No,
I'll pass for now.
Okay. I like it. I like
nice radio silence for you.
Yeah, no, but
yeah.
For the podcast. No, this is perfect because I like not just wasted guesses. Okay, my first sport was fire knife dancing, which is a ritual.
See, I should have. I almost said it, and I was like, no, I'm going to wait for one more. So I will now officially lodge my Tony Finau.
You're lodging a correct answer.
And I was always trust your gut on who am I. Just go with it. Make the play.
That's right.
Could have been there in two.
That's our slogan. Always trust your gut on who am I. That's like the catchphrase on my wall and everything. The last two I was going to get to, which would help, was I finished second on the Golf Channel's Big Break Disney in 2009. And my birth name is Milton, which was the final one. I didn't want to get into the ankle snapping because it still freaks me out more than anything. but it's well known. Beautiful. Well, that is the end of Who Am I? Cool. Yes, as mentioned, we are now at the start of a very exciting 3 weeks on the PGA Tour. We have this event, the St. Jude, then we go on to the BMW, and then, of course, the top 30 get to the Tour Championship. Now, guys, obviously a win does help a lot, but it doesn't guarantee you anything, basically, in terms of winning. So we're going to try find the winner overall, who's going to really trend through these 3 weeks and who's going to come out on top. So, Will, if you're just giving us, you can talk us through some of the names at the top, because obviously it's pretty close up there. But out of everyone, who would be your one and done for the FedEx Cup this year?
So I will fade the top three just because there's no fun in that. Although I do think that, as Ben alluded to, we're all waiting for Scottie Scheffler to have a decent putting week and then win by five. And as you get into these smaller fields with the playoffs, it's more likely that that's going to happen. So he could absolutely lap the field anytime. So that's always fun to try and bet against. But the name that I look at from that next group is Victor Hovland. I think that if you're looking for a player who I would expect reliable results from each of these next 3 weeks, he certainly ticks that box. I'm really excited to see Olympia Fields next week at the BMW. I was there when John Rahm won in that playoff in 2020. That course was in fantastic shape. It was a great test. I really hope that it's playing similarly to where it was 3 years ago, and that's something where we're going to have that play into the hands of a player like Hovland. We just saw last week with Lucas Glover, coming around and essentially fixing a huge Achilles heel with the putter. And we've seen similar strides from Hovland on and around the greens. There are still definitely some squirrely chip shots every now and then that are going to hold him back. But I think that in this format across these three courses, the ball striking is going to weigh a little bit stronger. And I think that in that 20-1 range, plus 2,000, I think Hovland gets my nut.
It'd be interesting to see what the standings are like after the first week, obviously, just to separate the big names at the top. But just for some context, anyone below, I think, Tyrrell Hatton in 17th place in the FedEx Cup at the moment would not reach John Rahm were they to win this week. So that gives you an indication of, where we should probably be focusing in terms of if you want to get ahead of John Rahm and be leading the FedEx Cup heading into Eastlake, then if you're below Tyrrell Hatton in 17th, you're not going to just have to win. You're going to have to do something else as well, or at least, a couple of top five, something like that. I'm sure there will be some volatility. And I'm looking at Colin Morikawa and Sam Burns as two players who obviously I like them this week, and therefore it fits that I would like them to progress through the playoffs and be up there at Eastlake. But I do think as far as Burns goes, it's hugely to his advantage that two of the final three events are in Tennessee and then in Georgia. So he'd be one to watch. But look, if you want my idea of the winner of the FedEx Cup, then it's Rory McIlroy. What can I say? His performance at Eastlake last year was extraordinary. To go and win in the manner that he did, I think his level of comfort at Eastlake is superior to anybody else's. And therefore, if he's within six shots, he would fancy his chances teeing off. Now, I'm not going to tell you he can do what he did last year and reel in Scheffler again, But I think he's looking like he's going to be a good deal closer to the lead than he was back then. So if Rory can just have a couple of solid weeks and enter in the top three, I think he goes and wins his fourth FedEx Cup.
Okay, there you go. Beautiful. So we've got a Rory in there as well as a Victor Hovland. Very good for Team Europe. Will's got the yellow stars just under his right bicep. We know that. We're going to get onto that quickly, but I'm just going to, as we've got you here, Will, and we're going to use you for that knowledge, and we won't have you next week for Olympia Fields. You mentioned you were there in 2020. What else can you tell us about? You said it was incredible, Nick, but in terms of, it's not a course we often see loads of, so in terms of any other courses we can look towards and just the early prep for future weeks, and it will also help with FedEx Cup winners potentially.
I mean, it definitely felt like a U.S. Open. I wasn't around much to remember. I saw the 2003 U.S. Open there when Jim Furyk won, but it wasn't really a highlight reel event. And I got there last year, and it's a big ballpark. There's some pretty thick rough. You have some ability to miss off the tee, but I think it's similar to the Country Club last year when you look at where Matt Fitzpatrick won the U.S. Open, where it's just a brawny venue. You're going to have to hit driver. There's a lot of undulation, a lot of holes where you're hitting down into a valley and coming back up to the green. You know, we saw Dustin Johnson, Jon Rahm. It was a 1A and 1B sort of event when the BMW was still 70 players. Now we're going to get down to 50. But I think that it felt like a major championship venue. The cut line was well over par. The winning score, I think there were only a handful of guys under par. So I haven't checked in with my Chicago sources yet to see if it's as firm and fast as it was last year, because that was a big part of it. If they get some rain and all of a sudden it's a little bit more lush and green, that could change things. But if it's playing like it was in 2020, where the ball was rolling out and it's crispy on and around the greens, it's going to be absolutely a major caliber test next week.
Awesome. And being in Chicago, I mean, we're going to expect some wind as well, obviously. So we like seeing the best names fully tested there. Okay, let's get on to the Ryder Cup then, because a lot of these names are going to be front and center in just a few weeks away, really. Now we'll come to Ben afterwards. The last few weeks, well, what we've been doing is getting the guys to pick some wild cards. It's been on both sides, and there were some prices done up for that, and we've got some interesting thoughts. But as we've got you, it's definitely, we need to hear what Team USA are thinking. What's the noise on the ground? Who do you think they will go with wildcards, and who would you go with as well? Because there's some interesting stuff and some names being added to that team list. If you look at the likes, Denny McCarthy gets a win, he could feature. We've got Brian Harman, some spots being taken. What's your sort of take on it? What are the noises out of America?
Yeah, I think that it's very interesting from the U.S. side to have Wyndham Clark and Brian Harman both scoop automatic spots, essentially, and take those two of those six right off the board. And now the bubble is thinning very quickly in terms of not only what you have to do, but now it's a case of who are you replacing on this team? Who am I leaving off in order to take you? I think I'm in the minority over here. It feels like I think Justin Thomas needs to be on this team. If I'm Zach Johnson, I saw everything I needed to see last week at the Wyndham. He didn't get it across the finish line, but he played really well. That 18th hole is a microcosm of why you want this guy in match play. He can pull wild shots off, make birdies at any time. Going back to Paris, I know that the last 5 or 6 months haven't been great, but I mean, he was the only guy that really was worth his salt from the U.S. side in Paris and played really, really well. We've seen how important these match play environments are to him, both in terms of the Ryder Cup and the President's Cup. American fans, I believe, tend to underrate how difficult it is to win a road game. And I think that that's why we've seen it stretch on for 30 years. You're going to need players that are comfortable in that environment. You're going to need players that can handle the pressure of being with the 11th or 12th man in. I think that Justin Thomas fits that. Now, again, on the flip side, are you taking him over Colin Morikawa? Are you taking him over Sam Burns if he plays as well this week as Ben? And I think he might. That's where it gets a little tougher. I think, frankly, it wasn't – I mean, Harman and Wyndham Clark didn't help matters, but I think Cam Young playing as well as he did in the Open really complicated things, because Cam Young was someone who – I think you can easily leave off this team for someone like Justin Thomas, hasn't won on the PGA Tour, hasn't played in a Ryder Cup. Now, all of a sudden, he's up so high on the list and he's played so well now in Europe for the last couple of years. It's a tougher case to leave him off. But if you're looking at the markets, I really think that the JT is probably going to be on this team, and he's someone that I would put on the team if I'm Zach Johnson. From there, it definitely gets complicated in terms of who you're going to leave off.
I've gone back and forth with Thomas. I've been a huge advocate pretty much all season of taking him. At times, I think I would have said it's utterly absurd to think of any other possibility. The flip side is, of course, that he's had every chance to do enough to take any doubt off the table, and he hasn't managed to do so. And I think it's right that there are doubts. I think ultimately my bottom line would be that whether he goes or he doesn't is not some great scandal. Like, I think we should remember that, right? As people debate it on the internet, it is not some huge, you know, anything if he does or he doesn't go. He has not played particularly well. He is Justin Thomas. There are very strong cases for and against. What I would say, though, is they shouldn't not take him because of the FedEx Cup. Because ultimately, the FedEx Cup is a fantastic season-long race that gives us loads to talk about now. But it does not tell you necessarily the order of the players on the PGA Tour. Justin Thomas is about 50th in strokes gained total. Shane Lowry is about 30th. Adam Scott's in the top 30. These are players who have played well enough to be considered one of the best 30, 50 players on the PGA Tour. The fact that they are not, the fact that guys like Eric Cole are in ahead of them or a Ben Griffin, is because the FedEx Cup point system, understandably, rightly or wrongly, I suppose is a better way to put it, gives you more points in terms of scale for finishing first, second or third, right? You get loads of points if you can finish second. So if Justin Thomas had gone over to the Bermuda Championship last year and finished second, he would, of course, have made the Ryder Cup side. And perhaps he's regretting that he didn't do that. But that is the point of the system. It is not weighted to field strength, except for a little bit more points for the majors and the players, right? So if you're Zach Johnson, you make a decision, and it's not based on whether that chip goes in on the last hole of the Wyndham or not. It's based on other factors. One of those factors will be partnerships, but also relationships, voices in the team room. So I've gone back and forth. I still don't know where I stand. But in terms of some of the names that are being thrown around as other options, who some people think should go ahead of him, I think it's very hard to argue for several of them. And the one who's really seems to have been taken off since his absolutely fabulous round of 58 on Sunday, I'm taking nothing away from him, but the idea that Zach Johnson should go and pick Bryson DeChambeau to be on this side, I find it extraordinary, to be honest with you. And as a European, let me say, I hope he does something extraordinary and goes with Bryson. You know, he's a fabulous player, but the bottom line is you don't need to bring that controversy. You don't need to be saying to Jordan Spieth, oh, I'm not bringing Justin Thomas. By the way, do you want to pair with Bryson? Like, it just seems like a silly idea, and hopefully one that Zach Johnson falls for.
I mean, we all knew you were obviously going to go with your favourite human ever, Justin Thomas, to be selected.
I do.
Yeah,
but I'm on the fence. But if you don't take him, take Finau or Morikawa or whoever else, right? Don't take Bryson.
Don't take Bryson. Keegan got a mention last week as well, interestingly. But I think we made it 9 minutes this episode before you mentioned a Justin Thomas win. So that was a new record, Ben, which was great work. Will, one for you. What is, as you mentioned, it's really hard winning on the road. What are sort of your thoughts on that and Europe, the whole team and how it's shaping up in general? Because there's going to be some very new faces and players to the general public in America. So how do you think they're going to fare? Because currently looking at the markets, they definitely are pretty heavy favorites, but that has not worked in their favor many times in the past.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of Americans rooting for Yannick Paul to play really well over these next few weeks and take one of those spots, because all of a sudden this European team now with Sepp Straka playing so well at the John Deere, you know, Shane Lowry is starting to come up again. You've got Fleetwood and Hatton. Now this team that maybe 6 or 8 months ago, you didn't really know where it was going to go. Now it's starting to take shape and it's seeming pretty solid. And I think that I'm very interested to see where Luke Donald goes with maybe one of the wild cards, where you feel like, the, you know, Zach Johnson on the U.S. side is going to go for a veteran presence, maybe someone like Justin Thomas. I think that Luke Donald might have the bandwidth to go for a young player, whether it's one of the Højgaards or Ludvig Åberg or even Vincent Norman, who has really played well in the last few weeks on the PGA Tour. Maybe you have someone like that you try and bring in on a home game where it's a more friendly environment, and you start building for the future Ryder Cups. It's hard to win on the road. I was lucky enough to be over in Paris in 2018 and saw that environment, and it's just difficult. And I think especially when you have a course in Marco Simone where the European Tour, the DP World Tour folks have played week in and week out, year in and year out, you know, this is a course that the Americans are essentially going to be flying in blind. I mean, these guys have been playing for a very long season, let's say. It's going to end in a couple weeks, so maybe there's going to be a scouting trip in early September, but it's not something that you can really learn as much as if you have, you know, some of these guys that are going to be in that Euro team room that have played here, that have won here. Even if someone like Adrian Meronk is kind of on that fringe and he gets in, that has the style to not be someone that really incites fear in an American fan, and then all of a sudden you see him go 4-1, and you're like, where'd this guy come from? He's making everything from 18 feet and in, super annoying. So I think that this is a much closer battle than maybe the odds makers have it right now. It's hard to really pin it down this far out because you're not getting the money that's going to move lines when you're nearly 2 months out from the event. But I am interested to see both on the European and the American side where those 10 through 12 slots go and what sort of composition creates that final team list. I think that what has transpired in the last few weeks with Harman and Clark kind of spurring on and snagging spots, they were not in this discussion at any point before those majors that they won. Now they've won spots, deservedly so. But at the same time, from the European perspective, you've got the right guys starting to play well and trend in a little bit more positive direction. Some of the veterans that you would need from Whistling Straits, from Le Golf National. So as an American, I'm getting ready for a fight.
Yeah, great. I think it's a great point you make as well, that they haven't experienced the course, and it's always called Europe proofing, isn't it? We saw it with Justin Thomas, you mentioned earlier. He was the only one who came over for the French Open. He was asked on the time and did all right that week, and he was the only one who got points, and they haven't got that. And someone like Adrian Meronk, he's won here. I think he's had a second as well, Ben will confirm. But one more name I wanted to pick, Will, is Ludvig Åberg, because the hype over here is massive, and what a start he's had. I mean, his college career. Ben's already told us, I think he said he's going to come back, fly home, win the Czech Masters and qualify through that. He's going to beat Justin Thomas in a playoff, I think, in that he's going to come over and play it as well. What's the talk over your side? Because the Scandinavians, as you mentioned, Højgaard's are doing well. We've got Vincent Norman, but Ludvig seems just next level, essentially.
Yeah, he does seem like the pick of the litter, coming up from the American side and seeing what he's done on the PGA Tour. What I will say, just to put a little bit of dousing of the flames here, I'm waiting for him to really put four rounds together. We've seen him flash for 36 holes or put a low round together, even get in position for 54. But it seems like, especially over the weekend, he's had a tough time maintaining the same level of performance that he has on Thursday and Friday. So that's, from my perspective, that's the next level that I'm expecting him to achieve, is give me, bell to bell, Thursday to Sunday, where you're consistent in your performance. And that's maybe what will win his Czech Masters over Justin Thomas. But I don't think any American would be surprised to see Luke Donald pick Ludvig Åberg for the captain's pick, especially maybe the 11 or 12 slot to round out the team. I think the Americans are kind of bracing for a pick for the future and someone that is really going to be a thorn in the side of the red, white, and blue for the next decade to come. And it definitely could be the Swede.
Yeah, his mission accomplished so far, Ollie, with Åberg. He failed to win in for the FedEx Cup playoffs. He now has nowhere else to go but back home to Europe. He's not in the field for the ISPS and a World Invitation. I'll forgive him that. He's probably earned a week off. He's been very, very busy the last couple of months. But I'm near certain he has to be in the field for the Czech Masters when we get that in the coming days. And I remain very keen on his chances there. But yeah, it's shaping up nicely, isn't it? I think there are a couple of unknowns on the European side, but that feels almost in the background at the moment because there's not a lot that can be decided. In fact, probably nothing that can be decided Team Europe-wise in the FedEx Cup. Maybe Seamus Power would be the one if he can put together a run. You could say he probably needs to put together a run. But it's all focus on America and their team, and then the focus will turn to Europe. Three events to qualify and then the selections by Captain Luke Donald. And then we get the BMW PGA Championship the week after that to enjoy before the Ryder Cup itself. So it'll be a massive 6 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks, and good fun in trying to ascertain who exactly is going to be on the side. Maybe it will come down to Åberg versus Thomas, not just for the Czech Masters, but for the Ryder Cup as well.
Absolutely right. That could well be the case. And I couldn't agree more. The next 6 to 8 weeks are so exciting. And what I've remembered in past years is that there are lots of little Ryder Cup battles that go on. Like last year, obviously, wasn't Ryder Cup, but you had Rory v. Scheffler. And I'm sure these things play on their minds through the FedEx Cup as that happens and late on Sunday afternoons. But gents, that pretty much brings us to a close. I will just do a quick recap before we say thanks and goodbye. Yes, time to recap all of the picks, starting with Will Gray, our debutant, and he opened up with Xander Schauffele and Sam Burns as his main picks for the FedEx St. Jude Championship this week, and then followed up with Matt Fitzpatrick, Keith Mitchell and Eric Cole, all longer at outright picks, but also to have a look at some of the top finish markets. And he finished by choosing Victor Hovland as his winner for the FedEx Cup overall. Ben Coley went with Scotty Scheffler on the nose and Colin Morikawa as his main picks this week, and then followed up with Cam Young. He also liked Sam Burns and long shot Davis Riley to go well. And Rory McIlroy was his selection to win the FedEx Cup. Yes, a massive thank you to Ben and Will. So, gents, can you just remind us where they can find you on social media so they can, you know, send you all the thanks and praises you find the multiple winners this week? Will, we'll start with you.
Multiple winners, no pressure. So I'm on Twitter at WillGrayGolfBet. We're going to have a ton of coverage on the GolfBet platform, which is where we do our betting information underneath the PGA Tour. We're going to have our senior writer, Ben Everill, is going to be on site this week in Memphis. I'll be up at BMW next week. It's a big 3-week stretch. We're going to have a ton of on-site innovative content. And yeah, if there are losers, I don't want to hear from anyone.
Exactly right. No, we block the losers. I always have done. No, thank you, Will. A real pleasure having you on. And Ben, where can they find you on Twitter and send you all the praise?
At Ben Coley Golf. Come and debate Bryson with me if you like. I will be there until it is no longer there.
Fantastic. Thank you very much again, guys. And to all the listeners, please do join us next time on The Tips, where we'll be previewing the BMW Championship from Olympia Fields, as well as the return of the DP World Tour with the ISPS Handa World Invitational presented by Aviv Clinics.